Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's going to be a good day. It's always a good day here aboard the mothership, and we're happy to be here. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSweepstakes.com. We appreciate you being here. And you heard the laughter of Little Mo. If you want to check out my Nomad episode of Little Mo, which was the debut episode of the new season of Nomad, my travel series, you can check that out on YouTube. Just search my name and Nomad and find the episode about Little Mo and the dedication of a street in downtown Baltimore, just outside where the Ravens play, in honor of Mo. It is Mo Gab Away. It is amazing. It was an amazing experience. And that, if you're looking for a reason to feel good, to feel encouraged about humanity, Little Mo is that. Hopefully this video provides that as well, so you can check that out on YouTube. You also, if you are watching at WatchDA.com or on Twitch, the Wizard of WatchDA, Andrew Kaplan, has been playing Nomad episodes during commercial breaks, so that's been very cool for our listeners and our viewers as well. Coming up here on the show, Chip Patterson's going to join us next hour as we discuss the end of this college football season and why ratings were so down. It was one of the lowest rated championship games ever. Also, we will have our friend Brian Jones, who's going to join us in hour number four to discuss the same exact thing and other points, all points from college football's 2020 season and going into 2021. We'll also kind of discuss why we think those ratings were so low coming up here in just a few minutes, but I want to finish off the segment that we were doing last hour as Meraz, the Peter Schwartz beat reporter, has reported that Schwartz unveiled his New Year's Eve spread, and we are now going over it. So cue the music once again here, Pete. We have now established that the overhead shot that has been posted to all of Schwartz's social media feeds revolves around a centerpiece of about 20 peel-and-eat shrimp. Now, Meraz, just how do you feel about shrimp being the centerpiece, the center, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the Bill Russell, if you will, the Shaq of your starting five?
Well, I got to support it, especially when you look around the salary cap allocation of what's on the table here, DA, and understand that shrimp are going to be the most expensive player. That is going to take up the most room in your cap. So if you're spending the most money on the shrimp should be the centerpiece. Shrimp are delicious. Shrimp can be fried, but these are just the typical cocktail shrimp. I love it. I think it sits there very bold, and I think you can get to at least a conference championship with the shrimp.
I'm a huge peel-and-eat shrimp guy. I don't always love when you get them from a deli and they taste like ammonium, or they taste like ammonia, rather, or they kind of smell a little like they've been washed in soap. But
yeah.
I can't speak to how these smell or taste, so I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to just assume that these are okay. to this direct left of the shrimp is going to be pigs in the blanket. You feel like these are just not your normal pigs in the blanket. Yeah. You felt like these are higher end pigs in the blanket.
They are. They are a little flakier. There's less pig spitting out of each end, if you will, of the dough. So usually when you wrap them themselves, you get more pig without the dough. The pig is compacted into the flaky dough here. And those are normally the fancy boxed ones that you'll find next to the frozen quiche at a Costco or a Sam's Club or something like that.
Upper right hand corner of this Hollywood Squares is what Mraz informs me is chicken fries. I would not have known this. I thought these were maybe cheese sticks, mozzarella sticks. These are deep fried pieces of chicken or parts of chicken rolled up into what appears to be cigars.
And you need to follow the sauce there, DA. North to south on your radio dial, you go honey mustard, ranch, and barbecue. That is the big tip-off for chicken there. And usually the chicken fry, a little longer and a little thinner than a mozzarella stick, which tends to be a little shorter and a little fatter. That signifies chicken fries and a big mound of them, because that will be the cheapest product you can find in your frozen food aisle that made its way onto the table here on New Year's Eve.
Upper left-hand corner. Now, this is separated from the chicken fries only from the Happy New Year paper plate.
Yes.
But that would be fried dumplings?
No, DA. No, that is spinach dip and salsa, and that are the classic Tostitos scoops.
Oh, wow.
Now, why you think those are dumplings, I could totally understand it, because going past Peter Schwartz spreads, or any spread, really, you would expect just the bag of chips to be out there where we reach our paws in there and dip away.
Yeah, this is real fancy. They put the chips on a plate.
Right. So this is enormous, and maybe this is a changing of the guard here in 2021 for the Schwartzes. Huh. To present the Tostitos scoops on fine china, I think is a real up-in-the-scale move.
China is a little bit of a reach here. It just looks like a normal bowl.
I don't think that's a solo plate there, DA. That's something that would have to be washed later on, assuming they have dish
soap. Reusable. Right. It is reusable.
But to pre-put the scoops out there tells me there's a little bit of watching our figure there, and we're going to pre-portion these out. I love this move of putting the Tostitos scoops with the little salsa, too, on the side.
I have one follow-up on that note, Sean. Explain to me the ratio between the XL bowl of the spinach dip and yet almost like a spoon-size salsa. That's not the right ratio in my mind.
So what I would tell you there, Bogus, is very simple. You have a family of four here on New Year's Eve. I've grown to love spinach dip in recent years, but spinach dip is one of those things your taste buds need to evolve into. Not an enormous hit with so many children. My thought would be big spinach for the big daddy and the little salsa for one of the children at least who doesn't like the spinach dip but still wants the chips.
It appears to be the only
scoop into that salsa thing. That's the problem for me.
It's Pete. I mean, Bogus, you're asking to figure out why they don't have enough bowls in the house. I can't tell you. There's probably a lot of ice cream that needed to be had later.
It also appears to me to be the only thing on the table that includes dairy. So you know it has to be XL size.
Yes.
It is cheese and more cheese. Bottom left-hand corner, I can't tell what this is. They look toasted, maybe a little burned, maybe a little browned. What is that?
Guys, those are the TGI Fridays frozen potato skins that have been overcooked to Christmas there. And I can tell you this because it comes with the exact amount that comes in that half box there of six. I've been guilty of buying these myself, and oftentimes they become misshaped. As you notice, the top right ones up there are a little smaller than the rest of the ones. They're a little bulkier. They're never the same size in that box. And they left them in the oven, I guess, at 400 degrees for about 5 minutes too long, and thus became a little burnt. But those are the TGI Fridays prepackaged potato skins.
Okay. Now, let's go wide right here. If you're looking at an offensive line, this is split all the way wide right, the wide receiver near the sideline. What are those? Those are round. They appear to be maybe have some spread on them and maybe some reddened something on them. They're circular.
Well, DA, this is where when you go real fancy with the quiche-style pigs in a blanket and the shrimp, you need to save a little money elsewhere. Those are classic bagel bites, DA.
Oh,
bagel bites.
Yeah,
so,
right. Okay.
And if you notice, it becomes very white at the bottom, which tells me not enough room in the oven when they were heating everything else. They went with the foil-bottomed, microwave-style way of cooking the bagel bites, the classic way we like to see them. I believe that's two boxes worth of bagel bites. So that is a look. Hey, if you're not going to order pizza, you might as well go bagel bites, a fancier style pizza on New Year's Eve.
I do like the theme of New Year's Eve 2021, which is what do we like to eat? Let's just get a little bit of all of it.
Yes.
There is kind of nothing thematically bringing it together. And then finally, well, maybe not finally, but the bottom right-hand corner, that appears to be something green, which is, to me, the biggest upset of the day, that there is something vegetable-laden or green on this table. But they are deep-fried in some way, and there is some type of white dipping sauce next to it. So what are we talking about there?
So, DA, this is the reason I knew they had the Friday's potato skins to the left. A lot of times at these Long Island supermarkets, the box of Friday's appetizers are two for $5. Two for $5 is a standard deal you will find here on Long Island where Peter Schwartz lives.
This is like the Tony Romo breaking down Long Island supermarket.
I know the prices. I know the prices. I'm there, so I'm going to tell you right now what these
are. You're going to see, Jim. Jim, you're going to see. You're going to see potato skins coming up here.
Here we go, Jim. So to pair it with the potato skins, these are the TGI Fridays frozen fried string beans. So, of course, you know how this family works. If they got to have an appetizer, it's got to have some breadcrumb and been thrown through a deep fryer only to be thawed out and then microwaved again. And it comes with a little package of like this weird dill type of sauce, if you will. Maybe a little wasabi ranch, I guess, would be the way to put it. These are definitely the TGI Fridays fried string beans. Again, makes the family feel good. They feel like they get their nutrients while also not being disrespectful to the fried heritage they love their foods in.
Fried this is the clincher to me. The one thing that's a vegetable on this plate is still frozen and fried. Can't even have simple. Some carrot sticks, some celery, some ranch dressing, maybe some like grape tomatoes. They make the little circular tray of it at the supermarket. It's easy to pick up. You can pretend to eat vegetables, but no, they still got to double down on friedness.
Yeah. Forget the little grape cherry tomatoes. Forget a little cucumber put out there. Forget even like celery and carrot sticks that you can dip in a dip. Nope. Instead, we're going to go frozen, deep-fried green beans with some type of really heavy cream dipping sauce.
Yes. Happy
to eat. And then finally, there is a smaller dish directly to the right of the shrimp. And I can't for the life of me figure out what this thing is. They look to be a little tan, a little brown. They're little balls. It almost looks like cherries. But shriveled, what exactly do you think that cup is?
And are those toothpicks in there?
Yes, so that's a big takeaway. And clearly what I'm learning here is I am probably more guilty of eating like the Schwartzes than you guys are. Guys, those are classic Swedish meatballs there. And the toothpick is the giveaway. Swedish meatballs, they end up being a little saucier on the bottom. That's why it's put in that glass bowl, because it'll be a little messier if you put it on a standard plate or a paper plate gets a little soggier. And the toothpick is the dead giveaway. Now, originally, you could think maybe bacon-wrapped scallop here or something like that.
No.
But now you're asking for too much work out of that family. So you have to know the family.
Money.
Right. You have to understand the family we're working with here, the toothpick presentation, the glass bowl presentation. Anybody knows that's a Swedish meatball that somebody concocted there in that house.
Okay. See, well, that's the breakdown. That's excellent. Mraz, I want to ask you, what's your big takeaway from the Schwartz's Happy New Year spread?
So I honestly would love to crush them. But I will say that New Year's Eve, typically, unless you go out for a nice dinner, maybe you want to do a hibachi or a steakhouse and then you come home. New Year's Eve, I think, is the one non-football year a night a year where it's okay to heat up some frozen appetizers and have at it. My biggest takeaway would be we don't need the picture of the spread because a lot of us are eating the same thing. And number two, look, to me, when you're heating up the pigs in a blanket, the bagel bites, the frozen string beans, you know, we went on and on, the chicken fries, you get some foil trays, you put them out on the table in those foil trays, you pick out with your hands. The fact that they took the time to properly present these on what to me looks like the finest china in the house and not your typical paper plates, I think it's a step in the right direction. This is a family looking to new year, new them in 2021. And if they're going to eat the same garbage, they at least want to be a little fancier when they eat the garbage. And I got to tip my cap and give them credit. Hey, they put up the Dollar Tree paper plates. That's fine. At least they're presenting it on some nice china.
In the upset of all upsets, Bogus is all in on this spread. You'd be happy with this New Year's Eve spread, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't always need to be fancy or hoity-toity. I think I'd happily eat five of the seven things they served on
What would
on
you
New
not
Year's
eat
Eve.
Out of there?
So the chicken finger thing, because the chickens don't
chicken
have fingers.
Fries.
Like, that just doesn't...
Chicken fries.
It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, they don't grow in fry form.
No. So, like, that's a little too far from what the actual food is supposed to be.
Chicken?
And then, like I said, I would have switched out the green beans for like an actual thing of like crudité, some actual raw veggies, dip in some ranch dressing, and then I'm good to go. But otherwise, bagel bites, good. Shrimp cocktail, good. Hot dogs, fine. Potato skins, I'm all for. And spinach dip, I'll take some of that too. So I think they did a pretty good job here.
Okay. For me, I mean, I could pick at this. I like pigs in a blanket. I like shrimps. I like peel and eat shrimp or shrimp cocktail, but those shrimp look pretty old and gray, so I think I might stay away from those. I would definitely do Tostitos in the chicken dip, or I should say the spinach dip. That seems fine. I definitely throw in a Swedish meatball. I like those. But what I'm looking at here is a night of heartburn. I'm looking at everything here is deep fried or cheesy. I definitely feel like I've got heartburn on the way after hanging out with the Schwartzes. Pete the Body, how do you feel about the spread for New Year's here?
Well, like Sean said, it is a spread that you would normally have on a New Year's Eve. But my gripe is that there's nothing fresh. Everything looks all in from a box. There's nothing like that's prepared, maybe like some grilled chicken or grilled chicken grilled chicken something that's not fried and fresh. I would have liked to see it on the plate.
Okay, yeah, everything is out of a box or out of a container and quickly taken out of the microwave for this meal.
And that, and real quickly, that is the key to that shrimp there, D, as you pointed out. I can tell you right now, that is the very thin shrimp platter that you would see somewhere that's probably packaged up 4 weeks earlier. It's not exactly like they went deep dying at the frozen fish market.
College football's championship was played the other day.
What did Schwartz eat for that? Next on the DA show.
Chicken.
No easy transition here. The college football title game between Alabama and Ohio State, according to Richard Deitch, drew only 18.7 million viewers. That is the least watched college football title game of the playoff era or even the BCS era. So we're going back basically 20 plus years ago. We've had more than 20 years. This is the least watched college football championship game in that history. Why? What's the big reason? I think that number one, the biggest reason actually, is that college football this year was relegated to second-tier status more than any other year because of how inconsistent everything was across the board. The fact that different conferences played different schedules, the fact that different conferences started the season at different dates, the fact that Ohio State played five games before their conference championship game. Meantime, the SEC and the ACC played 10 or 12, I think because there weren't fans allowed in most places. College football just didn't have its juice. What you realize is college football needs the fans. It needs the tailgates. It needs the pomp and circumstance. I'm a huge college football game day guy. I love college game day. I love watching the fans and the signs and the energy. It's why I love going to games in college football far more than the NFL. I didn't watch any college game day this year because what's the bit? There's no reason to be on site if there's no energy at that site. You might as well have those guys all inside the studio. So without that, it lost so much of its luster this year. And yes, games were played, but it just didn't feel as important as it normally does. And so I just think that college football over the course of the season was an afterthought for most. I know for us here on this show, we usually spend a lot of time on college football during the fall. This year, it was really limited. I mean, on the one hand, you just have teams that didn't play games. Like we would normally talk about the Pac-12. We would normally talk about how USC looked and how Oregon looked and what the USC and Oregon or the rest of the Pac-12 mean to the college football playoff picture. And we just couldn't do that because they played three freaking games. It just didn't matter. And in the SEC, without your home crowds, what it did was it stripped away any crazy upsets that could happen where Alabama going somewhere and traveling, the reason that they might trip up is because of the din of the crowd, the raucous chaos that could happen by going on the road. Without that, everything felt really sterile and the great teams just kind of rolled right through, which is why there was barely a sweat broken by Alabama this year, by Clemson this year, by Ohio State. The only way that Clemson could lose to Notre Dame was if they didn't have freaking Trevor Lawrence, who, by the way, was out only because of COVID, not because of a football injury. So I just think the college football season in general was compromised this year. That's the biggest reason to me. Number two, I definitely think there was football fatigue in when this was played. You had, for the first time ever, six NFL playoff games, all played on Saturday and Sunday. By the time we get to Monday night, a lot of people are just footballed out. They just watch six freaking football games. To have them line up and watch a national championship game the next night is probably like, you know what, I'm going to take a break, or I don't need to watch this, or I have to catch up on doing this because I didn't do it over the weekend. If college football was smart, and we talked about this yesterday, Mraz brought this up, push it to later in the week. Even Tuesday night or Wednesday night is better than Monday night, coming off all of the action of an NFL weekend that for the first time ever had six games, and two of them being in prime time. So we had a Sunday night game going into a Monday night game. You didn't need it. And I think number three, and this is obvious, there is a fatigue on Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson that it just feels like they're always there, specifically Alabama, because they are always there. And it's just not that interesting anymore to a lot of people. Now, in Alabama, of course, you're going to watch, and you're going to watch in record numbers. We saw those clips, the footage of tons, thousands of people in the street. That was a little disconcerting. But, of course, in Alabama, you're obviously going to watch this game. In the SEC, you love football. You're watching Alabama either because you love them or to hate watch and root against them, so you're going to watch there. But for a lot of casual fans, watching Alabama is not all that fun anymore, which is weird, which is kind of interesting because they play a much more interesting style of football than they ever did. It's not running the football and playing defense. But Alabama's Alabama. It's so predictable that people just get tired of it. And when you have the same teams, we knew coming into this playoff, either Bama, Clemson, or Ohio State were going to win the national championship, and that's it. Whoever got in that fourth slot had no chance, and Notre Dame, we knew, was going to get buzzsawed in that first game. It just becomes an inevitable, a march to the inevitable. And without the excitement and these teams that have always been there, it creates fatigue and exhaustion. So I think because of all of those things, this was the lowest rated college football championship game in more than 20 years, understandably so. And the only way you can change this is when college football is back to being normal with fans and full schedules, etc. That helps. If you push it away from wildcard weekend by a day or two, that will help. And if you have more of an opening for more teams to break in, like if this year, even if it was Alabama, Cincinnati, look, maybe that draws a few more fans because you're wanting to see if Cinderella can pull off one more upset. Certainly, if Cincinnati had knocked off Alabama, then you're like, wow, this team has something. To open up the doors for new blood, new life, and new fans, I think would be a huge move and a big win for college football. When we come back here on the DA Show, we've got your Stunned to a News segment. Also, we'll talk about James Harden and him seemingly taking a dive to get out of Houston. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
Yeah, you're a big foodie. I've seen a couple of your nomad.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Foodie Sunday. The NFL playoffs continue on CBS as the surging Browns visit Patrick Mahomes and the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs. Kickoff is set for just after 3 p.m. Eastern time. Who takes the next step on the road to Super Bowl 55? Find out this weekend when the AFC Divisional Round plays out, only on CBS. My bad. I thought we had Stunned to a News coming up here this segment. Instead, we'll have Chip Patterson, college football writer for CBS Sports, and I'll ask him what's his theory on why the ratings were so down for this college football national championship and moving forward to 2021, putting a bow on 2020. But first, our headlines with the kind Sir Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, what do we got?
My bad, my friend. Hello. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Hello again. It was not a good Tuesday by any count for James Harden. The Rockets-Lakers game was on NBA TV. So here's what was said as cameras showed Harden in pregame layup lines.
James Harden definitely had a pregame meal, averaging 17 points per game over the last four.
James Harden definitely had a pregame meal because, again, that midsection looked a little puffy underneath a jersey and a warm-up shirt. But, again, that's on NBA TV taking shots at James.
That's league-owned.
After that, we've already discussed this, LeBron did some trick shots and the Lakers win 117-100. Then Harden said the Rockets suck and he doesn't know how to make them stop sucking. Poor John Wall was left to subtweet Harden.
When the 1 through 15 guys all on the same page and they commit, they know their role, they know what they want to do, they know what they want to get out of this, that's the win, you all will be fine. But when you have certain guys in the mix that don't want to buy in all this one, it's going to be hard to do anything special, do anything good as a
basketball
team. Brand
new to the city, and he's got to sit there and answer questions about James Harden going AWOL, basically. Harden's comments, his first, about his unhappiness in Houston. The Rockets are still talking to teams about a trade, but reportedly can't find anyone to pay their asking price. Back on the court, the Nets still don't have Kyrie Irving, but they did beat the Nuggets last night, 122-116. Irving expected out this week, at least for personal reasons. The Nets and the NBA investigating video of Kyrie at a family birthday party without a mask. The Jacksonville Jaguars reportedly waiting on Urban Meyer to make up his mind. Pro Football Talk says Herb is leaning towards taking the job. As for the playoffs, Aaron Donald and Cooper Kupp sat out Rams practice yesterday. Sean McVay says Donald and his ribs will be ready for the Packers. Less confidence about Kupp and his sore knee. College Hoops last night, a top 10 upset.
Garrett floats it into Brown, intercepted by Bryce Williams. Williams dribbles into the front court, slams it in. Down goes Kansas. Down goes Kansas. The Cowboys have done it to the Jayhawks again. 75-70. Oklahoma State takes down number six.
That's
Kansas.
Dave Hunsaker from Learfield IMG College. Unranked Oklahoma State beating Kansas, the sixth-ranked Jayhawks, 75-70. Michigan destroyed Wisconsin, 77-54 in a meeting of top 10 Big Ten teams. And Virginia Tech topped Duke 74-67 in a meeting of ranked ACC teams. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. National championship, as we just mentioned, in the books. Full steam ahead to 2021. Joining us here on the show is one of our favorite college football writers. He writes for CBSSports.com. You see him on CBS Sports HQ as well. Our friend Chip Patterson. Chip, good morning.
DA, good morning. Good to be back with you.
You too, buddy. And you can always check us out by watching us at watchda.com as well as on Twitch. So you can check out the CBS Sports Radio channel there to watch the show every day. So, Chip, let's start with the national championship game. Ratings were lower than any other national championship game in the BCS or playoff era. Give me your theory on what the biggest reason for that was.
The general trend that we've seen for all of the sports events for the most part. I mean, there have been some, football Sundays that I think sort of are baked into our just sort of general American consciousness on the NFL side that are going to be, a little bit difficult to shake. But whether it's the Major League Baseball World Series, whether it's the NBA Finals, and certainly with the college football playoff, because if you were to line it up and tell me that Alabama and Ohio State, not Alabama and Clemson, we're introducing a very populous Midwestern contingent that wasn't always there for those epic Saban versus Dabo battles. I kind of think that I'm not going to panic too much about the sport as a whole, just because of what we've seen throughout this entire sports cycle, in that with a lot going on. And look, certainly, it was a very eventful week outside of sports leading into the national championship, that some of those common potential eyeballs that aren't dialed in every single Saturday, that aren't checking up on the college football rankings on Tuesday night, that their minds might have been elsewhere. I'm willing to take that into consideration for sure.
That's fair. That's a good point. So you don't think any part of this is Alabama fatigue?
No, definitely not. Because, Michael Jordan fatigue, Chicago Bulls fatigue, New York Yankees fatigue. I actually like when we've got these juggernauts and we've got these dynasties. They don't run forever. And I think that the conversation about 6 and 12 years and 7 back to 2003 is really what this championship does to solidify Nick Saban as the greatest of all time. And when you've got a GOAT in action, I actually think that's great for the sport because they set the standard, they push the pace, and it really makes the entire sport better because everyone is trying to keep up with the best to ever do it.
So I like that point. I see your point there. But sometimes when you have the GOATs or the dynasties, they play the same teams over and over again, there can be some fatigue. Like, let's take the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Golden State Warriors. By the time we got year number four of that of the NBA Finals, it was not as hot, it was not as interesting or watched as the first 2 years were. So do you think that maybe because it was predictable that Bama versus Ohio State or Bama versus Clemson are kind of seen as we'll get that every year, that that could have hurt ratings at all?
I think that there's a lot of fans that are taking up the plight of the Group of Five, and they are seeing an undefeated Coastal Carolina team at the end of the season. They are seeing a Cincinnati team that has an undefeated record on that selection day, and they are hearing the complaints and the frustrations of American Athletic Conference Commissioner Mike Oresko. I think that some of the fatigue is probably coming from fans who understand that it's got to be frustrating to start a college football season and just right from the jump feel like you don't have a shot to compete for a national championship. That goes against the mentality, especially at the NFL level, where you really do feel like unless you're maybe what, four or five teams, I mean, pretty much any NFL team outside of a handful can start a season and be like, hey, listen, if we catch a couple breaks, then we might be able to be in the mix for the playoffs. And then to contrast that with a Cincinnati or a Coastal Carolina, where the two-loss Big 12 champion has a better chance of making it into the college football playoff than you do, then that's something that I think is a common frustration that can be spread across sports. I think that some college football historians would point out that the sport has never been fair for everybody, and it has consistently at the top been populated by the same 10 to 12 teams over different eras. Now, some of those teams cycle down, some of those teams cycle up. Certainly programs like a USC or a Texas or a Miami would love to be back up in that national championship conversation every single year, whereas they just really aren't. I think that, the fatigue part of this is very much in the moment and probably more focused on that Group of Five. Do we have access in? Like, that's really, to me, what's driving the college football playoff expansion talk is just the frustrations that you could have multiple teams that are conference champions or co-conference champions have zero losses on their resume. And not only are they like just being left out at number five, but that the final rankings from this selection committee really sent a message that until the system changes, it really wasn't built for those programs.
Yep, the Cincinnati corollary, where they could have multiple ranked wins, they could go undefeated, they could win their conference championship and not be anywhere close to the top four. And that just feels like, well, then there's nothing else we can really do. Chip Patterson joins us, college football writer for CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, CBS Sports HQ. You were fired up, though, for 2021, and you said that if you could, you would be at Bank of America Stadium, Georgia and Clemson, to open up 2021. And you want to be double vaccinated and slathered in mayo. I can only imagine that means you like mayo on your sandwiches and you, like me, are offended at the people that say that mayo is some type of demon spread.
I like mayonnaise, though. I do like a lot of things. I do prefer some moderation. You know, you've always got to understand based on the sandwich shop you're at or based on who's making your sandwich. You know, that beach week with the family, who's actually up there making the sandwiches. Mm-hmm. I need to know whether they share the same kind of moderation. I thought that the image of me slathered head to toe in mayonnaise would express how far I'm willing to go to be in a position where I could be at midfield, two doses of the vaccine down, with fans in the stands excited for Georgia Clemson because it is an awesome game. Like, when we think about JT Daniels coming back, when we think about DJ Uiagalelei finally getting the range from Trevor Lawrence, we talk about how many teams can start a season actually feeling like they've got a shot at the national championship. well, there's two right there in Georgia and Clemson. And not often do we get two teams that start the season in the national championship conversation facing off. I mean, hey, how long has it been since we've seen this, a premier non-conference game? So, yes, I like mayonnaise. And I also, my other mayonnaise tip, I know that I'm not original on this one, but, you know, get it on the outside of the bread for the grilled cheese instead of trying to get the skillet a little bit too buttery. You know, that's all you need, baby. You just a little bit on the outside of the bread, and that serves as a nice little flavor enhancer, as well as a little bit of a cooking aid. But I will be, and I'm in touch with the Duke's Mayo Bowl people. If they want to put me head to toe in mayonnaise midfield for the coin toss at Georgia Clemson, as long as I'm double vaccinated, I'm down.
College football analysis and grilled cheese cooking tips with Chip Patterson from CBS Sports this morning. You like the hire of Sark at Texas?
I liked it more before the press conference. I loved it when I was thinking about how Steve Sarkisian, clearly, if he had hung around at Alabama, he would have been in this conversation for, are you going to be next up? He probably could have sat by Nick Saban's side, dialing up more masterful scripts and schemes and play calls like he did in that national championship game. And then, you know, he might not get the job after Saban retires, but he would be on a very short list to be able to do it. But when Texas calls, man, you got to go give it a shot. I said, okay, all right, Sark, let's see what you're going to be able to do. You've been at USC. You understand what it's like to have to negotiate between power brokers and boosters and influential university administration. You've had to dance that dance before. And I think that this might be a good opportunity for him. And then all of a sudden he gets up at that press conference, and it seems as though one of the reasons that Steve Sarkisian was able to get that job is that he has really blown away the Texas administration with the interview process. He was saying, like, look, the Eyes of Texas controversy. Nah, we are singing the Eyes of Texas. What are we going to do? We're going to put up points like we did with Alabama, 49 points per game. And so now I look to him to say, all right, if you've won over the administration, and the administration is, and I include the athletic director in this, and they're going to try to wrangle all these cooks in the kitchen. Well, now Sark's got to really go and make a pitch to a locker room that I saw in this last year under Tom Herman that was really fractured, and a locker room that wasn't always going out there, and the execution wasn't great. Texas wasn't a very good tackling team. They're one of the most penalized teams in the Big 12. So it seems to me, and this is, you know, just my read now, and he's got plenty of time to be able to work on this one way or the other, but it seems to me like he won all of the, like, older adults in the room, and now it's time to work on, like, winning over the younger adults in the room. He's gotten the job, and now the real challenge is going to be being able to take a team that has had some hurt from falling short of expectations and being able to unify them. And if you think that's going to be easy, look no further than Florida State, a program that went from winning a national championship in 2013 to just really, really quickly college football playoff in 2014. And then the struggle started to set in and the losing started, and they didn't really know how to handle it. And it just built on top of each other. And some of Willie Taggart's last year, some of Florida State's struggles in the first year with Mike Norvell, I absolutely attribute it to just one of these, I don't want to call it a culture, but it's just a feeling where there's been year after year of frustration from falling short of expectation. And I do think that that has a real impact on a locker room and on a team. So I think Steve Sarkisian's won over all of the older adults. And now his biggest challenge for the offseason is going to be to unify the younger adults and get them all on the same page and get them to buy in to what he's selling. So congrats. He's got the job, but I think he's got a lot of work to do.
It's an interesting observation. Chip Patterson joining us this morning here on the show, CBSSports.com, CBS Sports HQ, college football analyst and writer, also college basketball as well, and we're now in the thick of the college basketball season. Chip, always good to catch up, my man. Thank you so much for all the time throughout this college football season. I always really enjoy our conversations.
Me as well, DA. Have a good morning. Y'all be well.
Take it easy. You too. Chip Patterson, as always, I enjoy having him here on the show, dropping on by to drop some college football knowledge. When we come back, Aaron Rodgers says that he wants, and he will, guest host an episode of Jeopardy. And we are wondering, does this make him a hypocrite? We'll tell you how next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
You know, Aaron Rodgers broke his heart. Hashtag stay away from me, buddy. A video that, you know, I've gone to psychological counseling for.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And remember that the DA show is available on your smart speaker. Just tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio. So we get news yesterday that Aaron Rodgers is going to guest host an episode of Jeopardy. Apparently, he's a huge Jeopardy fan. Unfortunately, tragically, Alex Trebek has passed away, and so now they're trying to find some guest hosts. And apparently Rodgers says it's a ritual at the Rodgers household every night, 6 o'clock, watching Jeopardy and trying to get as many as he can right. And Rodgers does feel like a Jeopardy kind of guy. Jay Cutler, definitely not. Rodgers, definitely, yes, seems like a Jeopardy guy. But if he is as charismatic, telegenic, and comfortable with being in front of people and playing to a crowd as to guest host Jeopardy, it makes you wonder about a time a couple of years ago where our very own Sean Mraz approached number 12. And he approached number 12, Aaron Rodgers, with a picture of himself and nothing but a Speedo greased up like a stuck pig with birdseed poured all over him, because that was the bet. That if the Giants had lost to the Packers a number of years ago in the wild card game, then he was going to have to go out into the Central Park with nothing but a Speedo on to let those birds peck away at his pink little flesh. And because Rodgers was very good in that game, we saw Rodgers a couple of months later at the Final Four, and Mraz went up to him at a Scottsdale bar and said, "This is what happened. You made me do this." And Rodgers infamously told him, "Get away from me, buddy." Now, this scarred Mraz for life, and we still talk about it to this day, obviously. And so, Mraz, do you feel like it's a little hypocritical for Aaron Rodgers to be so comfortable to host Jeopardy, but yet so dismissive of you, who could be, he didn't know, a Jeopardy watcher?
Well, there was about 14 explicit words that I cannot utter on the radio that came out of my mouth yesterday as I sat down on my computer and read this story. Because to me, this comes across as him being absolutely phony and not who he is. Yeah, everybody could be a fan of a game show, and then that doesn't mean you have to host it. Look, I know that Jeopardy is for smart people, very intelligent people, people maybe not like me. But you need to have a little something, a little, you know, energy, a little bit of personality when it comes to doing this. And it just goes to show you, Aaron Rodgers and his stupid commercials with the discount double check is not who he is in real life. If you can't laugh when a fat, bumbling idiot shows you a picture of himself covered in birdseed explaining that you ended up making him like that, how do you deserve to go host a game show and have any kind of energy? You are a fraud. And I don't like, if this is where Aaron Rodgers trying to smooth over what his post-playing career is going to be the next host of Jeopardy, he's not charismatic enough for it. Get him out of here.
Who's the smartest person you know?
Ooh.
Is it your cousin who's an engineer from Duke?
Probably, or actually, probably my cousin Chris, who's like really into numbers and everything, and actually I think does some kind of accounting for sports teams or something like that.
You don't know.
Well, because when he talks to me, he's just so smart, after 2 minutes I doze out.
Okay, so if your cousin Chris had a picture of himself and went up to Aaron Rodgers at that table and explained to Aaron Rodgers what happened with that bet, do you think Rodgers listens to Chris because Chris comes off as more intelligent than you?
No. I think Aaron Rodgers was in no mood to talk to anybody, frankly, who wasn't a female that night at a bar, and he couldn't laugh. Like, he couldn't be one of the people that he was trying to be. I don't think it mattered that it was me. I think it could have been you covered in birdseed, and he would have turned you off.
So he's not anti-dumb. He's just antisocial. And that's what you're saying. If you're antisocial, don't be hosting game shows.
Right, or anti just having fun in real life. You know what I mean? Like, he's just such a plain rock. We saw him at the bar. He wasn't Mr. Fun. And if you're not going to be Mr. Fun, you can't be hosting a game show, even if it's Jeopardy, which doesn't exactly feel like The Price is Right.
Rodgers, yeah, would be really bad if the price is right, where you got to be kind of goofy and,
yeah,
and expect a lot of personality.
It's not him. He's a fraud for wanting to do this. He just wants to check a box of something cool he did, but he doesn't deserve to host Jeopardy. He doesn't deserve it. He's not personality enough.
Do we know who else is guest hosting Jeopardy? I didn't even know they were doing this, but it makes
sense. Well, I know Ken Jennings, which I guess is one of the smart guys on it. He's hosted a bunch. Other
than
that, I don't know.
He's one of the all-time Jeopardy champions.
Katie Couric.
Oh, Katie Couric. Okay. And I think Pete the Body Bellotti.
Pete, you're a big Jeopardy guy, right?
Oh, yes.
Would you want to see Aaron Rodgers host Jeopardy?
No, I think it's dumbing it down, to be honest with you.
Dumbing it down, huh? Okay, so not a lot of fans around here for Rodgers hosting. When we come back, Andre Johnson takes aim at Jack Easterby.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.